views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network. Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed is in on this broadcast from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is December 11, 2015. It is a Friday. Might as well say it's a Friday evening. Greetings to those who were listening to some of the pre-recorded content that we have on Black Talk Radio Network, your digital black radio station for new black media for the new millennium. You may have been expecting this program to come on at its regular time, 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, as we broadcast Black Talk Radio News. But I was up real late last night working on a client's website, and then I got into a video chat session with a brother that was very knowledgeable about technology, and we were just talking about website designing and whatnot. So I didn't get to bed till like 6 o'clock this morning. Totally threw me off, threw my schedule off, and I just was not prepared to come on air at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Brother Dave, who hosts the Tando radio show at the 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time slot, he's still moving as his family's making that move from California to Texas. And so he let us know yesterday that he was not going to be on air. So I decided to just move our start time up to 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. So sorry about the mix-up in the scheduling. So sometimes we just have to roll with the flow and do things on the fly. Let me just go ahead and tell you about what I want to share with you, the information in the news. And, of course, we're always interested in hearing from our listeners if they have any news to report, any observations that they made that they think would be constructive for others to take note of. But some of the things that I want to talk about today as we talk about the News Week in review, the Daniel Holdsclaw, that is the former Oklahoma City cop, his trial concluded, I think it was yesterday, with the jury handing down a verdict. I think he was found guilty on 18 of the 30-something charges involving 13 women. 12 of the women, I think, were black. I'm not sure of the classification of the other victim, the non-black victim. I don't know. But these women, many people are saying, were targeted because of their social economic status in this society. This was a poor neighborhood in Oklahoma City. And Daniel Holdsclaw preyed upon those women, banking on the fact that nobody would believe them because of their socioeconomic status, because they are black women and because they are poor, either or, take your pick. So he thought that he was going to be able to get away with it. And there was a lot of concern about a all-white jury being empathy challenged. Let's call it empathy challenged, as we know many studies have shown that the majority, not all, but the majority, white people do not empathize with non-white people. There are several university studies. This is why I have called for empathy testing in the jury pool for everyone to see if you have these covert or overt biases that would render you incapable of delivering justice or objective, you know, be able to look at the case and judge it objectively based on the evidence. And so it was refreshing to see that this all-white jury apparently empathized with the non-white victims, and they found this former cop guilty. And now he is a convicted rapist. And I don't know if y'all saw the video or whatnot, and I'm going to play the audio to the video. I don't know if y'all saw that, but he was crying and shaking like a rape victim. You know, like I'm sure one of his victims was crying and shaking, you know, after he violated them in such a brutish, vile manner. The victims ranged in age from a child, 17 years old, and I know that's a teenager, and many of us want to call a 17-year-old a young woman or something like that. But no, that's a child. That's 17-year-old child, okay? So his victims ranged in the age of 17 all the way up to, I think, the one grandmother was like in her 50s, mid-50s and whatnot. And if she had not come forward, it was believed that they wouldn't have believed the other victims, because the other victims had so-called criminal records, mostly for nonviolent drug charges, things that shouldn't even be, codified in law. As if we ain't got enough rapists, murderers, child molesters, bank robbers, and other criminals to go after, but you want to waste taxpayer resources going after people for nonviolent drug offenses and whatnot. So there's also an interesting take on it from the blogger For Harriet. She's a black female blogger. I will let y'all listen to her audio clip as well. I promised yesterday, I didn't have time. Time just went by yesterday, and it went by so fast. I didn't have time to talk about the affirmative action case that is before the SCOTUS right now. For those that don't know what SCOTUS is, that's the Supreme Court of the United States. A lot of news been coming out of that case. I shouldn't say a lot of news, but Justice Antonin Scalia, son, I think he is the descendant of some Italian immigrants and whatnot, and he was making some comments that I would interpret as being racist and suggesting that black people don't do well at these institutions of higher learning and whatnot. So he's been getting a lot of headlines, but I don't even want to focus on him. You know, he said what he said. He is what he is. So I don't even want to waste your time talking about his ignorant comments, what some would say, and I would agree, his racist comments. Like he's, engaging in the, what would we call it, the pseudoscience of phrenology. And so, but what I do want to focus on is the fact that this rich little white girl, and she is rich, she comes from a wealthy family in Texas, as I mentioned yesterday, and, you know, she didn't get to go to the University of Texas because her grades were not up to par. And so instead of her transferring to or going to a community college or a college she could get in, and bring up her grades and then reapply to get into the University of Texas, she got mad, and so she filed a lawsuit. She filed what I feel like is a frivolous lawsuit, and it is also a complicated lawsuit, because how can a white woman who has minority status under affirmative action then use, you know, target affirmative action and say, hey, I didn't get in, you know, when white women benefit from affirmative action more than anyone, okay? And most of the poor students who did not meet the standards in terms of the SATs or PSATs and whatnot, and they were poor, they were poor. The majority of those weren't even black students, weren't even Hispanic students, they were poor white students. But those poor white students, why they did not, and the other students, why they did not have the grades that or the test scores, standardized test scores that the University of Texas normally looks at, they had other things to offer, like extracurricular activities that they were involved in. They might have been, and I'm just assuming, or I'm taking a guess, I don't know. But I'm assuming that maybe they participated in the ROTC. Maybe they were, participating in the chess club, or who knows? Who knows what other extracurricular activities that the University of Texas was looking at that says, you know what? You don't have the scores, but you know, we don't want to penalize you because you poor. We don't want to penalize you because you black. We don't want to penalize you because you Hispanic. And we think that you have tremendous potential, and we see how you was involved in things in your community, and you're just an all-around person. So you know what? We're going to go ahead and let you in. Again, the vast majority of the people who they let in like that were poor white people. And then you have this rich little white girl come along trying to play the race card. And that is exactly what she's doing, is playing the race card. And it's just very sickening to me and whatnot. So if you have any thoughts on that you would like to share, you can share those with me on air today on Black Talk Radio News. The last story that I will take a look at, and I may get to some other stories. I'll take a look at our social media feeds and see what's popping. And but the other story, somebody submitted a news story to us through Black Talk Radio Network's news submission page that we have on the site, as we allow the people who visit our site, readers, listeners, and whatnot, to share either news tips with us or articles that they have written themselves, and we'll publish them for them. So someone sent me a link to an article concerning the Waco, what would we call it? The Waco shootout, something like that, showdown at Twin Peaks restaurant. I don't know what to call that. But for those that may not recall, you may recall if I mention the fact that this was a bunch of bikers, biker gangs and whatnot. I don't want to call them biker gangs. Let's just call them biker gangs. Okay. Yeah. So there, you know, this was the bunch of not a bunch, but a few biker clubs, gangs, whatever you want to call it. They had a meeting at the Twin Peaks restaurant. This was maybe a few months ago. Don't ask me the exact time and date that it happened. Maybe 4 months ago, 5 months ago, if that long. And all of a sudden, so these guys were meeting at this restaurant, right? And so I guess they was going to determine whose territory is who. Who can sell crystal meth in this town, and who can sell, who can engage in sexual trafficking of females and probably little boys too in that town over there. So that's what it seemed like it was, is that, you know, they were going to have a meeting to determine what their criminal empire boundaries were going to be. And all of a sudden, you know, shooting ensued, and we witnessed a whole lot of white-on-white crime that was going on, even though people don't want to call it that. I understand there was a black biker, and he's the only one I saw, but he assimilated into that biker club and whatnot. But here is the thing, though. Here's what you're not hearing from corporate media, and I heard this early on. And I do view that as a case of police brutality, terrorism. Some of the news that I was getting early on is that the police squad was in the parking lot. They had a squad van in the parking lot. And some of the witnesses, and I'm talking about some of the white bikers and whatnot, said that it was the police who started the shootout. Said that they shot into the restaurant, and chaos just then ensued. And so that's not getting talked about a whole lot. And it's like, you know, the police came along and just lit a match and threw it on, you know, some gasoline and lit a fire of white-on-white violence. And so I'm going to take a look at that story. If you have, again, any comments, any news that you would like to share with us, you can give us a call. We got two different lines that you can call us on. The conference line is 70, excuse me, I'm about to give you the studio line. Let's start with the studio line. The studio line is 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. The conference line, that number is 641. Let me take a look at it because I got brain freeze. It's 641 because they changed the number on us, but it's 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. That is, again, 549 #0032#. Greetings to those that are hanging out on the line, listening to the program through the conference line. And anytime you would like to chime in, just hit *6 and 1. That's *6 and 1. And then the other way, of course, is you can chime in through the video chat. I'm not sure, again, I probably should have tested this last night, but I think that, you know, there's an open seat and people can just, you know, chime in whenever they feel like. I don't think I have to approve it. I may have to, but I don't think I have it locked. So y'all bear with me as I'm still finding my way around Blab. Again, great platform. I love the platform. I was actually looking to doing our live streaming on our YouTube channel. If you on YouTube, follow us at Black Talk Media. That's Black Talk Media. That's the name of our YouTube channel. You can watch some of the videos and stuff that we post there. And but as I was talking to some people on Facebook about, yeah, I'm excited, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and try to incorporate video into our broadcasting and whatnot. And somebody shared the link to Blab IM with me. And I was like, you know, wow, this is really easy to use. This is like cool as hell, man. I really dig this platform. It makes it easy and simple, and they allow you to embed your video chats on your own website and do it that way. So shout out to the people who are the creators of Blab Network. I am a technological guy, and I'm very appreciative of a good product of new technology. It's just, I can't say enough good things about the platform. All right, let me go ahead and pull up our Facebook page where I posted a video of Daniel Holzclaw. Again, this is the police officer, former police officer, now convicted rapist. And I mean, we could call him a mass rapist, can't we? He's not just a regular old rapist, man. He's a serial rapist is what he is. And so I just hope that he doesn't go to prison and rape anybody. You know, a lot of people want to joke around and say, yo, he may be a victim of rape himself, but that's a pretty big dude. I think he's like 6'4", 240 pounds, something like that, in tremendous shape. At least he looks like he's in tremendous shape. And I'm sure he can go in there and possibly join one of them white supremacist gang, and they'll protect him from any of the non-white inmates that want to target him because he targeted black women and because he raped a black child. It is very possible that he could go in there and continue to be a rapist because, you know, as I know, because of my study of prison slavery in this country, again, going back to our program yesterday, slavery was never abolished. The 13th Amendment has an exception clause that says that you can be enslaved as punishment for crime. And certainly, them corporations can't wait to hire you. I'm talking about Walmart. I'm talking about Victoria's Secret. I'm talking about AT&T, Sprint, Verizon. Man, you would be surprised if you didn't look into it, you know. If I didn't look into it and see the research that other people had done, I would find it hard to believe. But it is not hard to believe if you're paying attention to what's going on. And so, you know, rape is rampant in our prisons. All right. That's another reason why we shouldn't be sending people to prison over so-called drug crimes, which I don't consider them to be crimes any more than somebody who is sipping on some wine or something. I've seen people doing YouTube videos where they chilling and drinking their wine or beer or what. Now, I don't view smoking meth, smoking crack, smoking anything. I don't view that as a crime worthy of a person. I don't view it as a crime at all unless you're selling drugs to children. But if you are an adult, I don't think the government has a right to tell you what you can put in your body. But before I go off on that tangent, because I'll do that sometimes, but rape is rampant. And, you know, because of the prison industrial complex, because of the prison plantations, a lot of people don't realize that women are not the leading rape victims in America. No, it's males. Males are the leading rape victims in America. And I know a lot of people don't care because they say, well, you shouldn't have been smoking that weed. You know, I'm offended by you smoking weed. And so I think you should go to prison And if you get raped, so what? You know, you shouldn't have been smoking weed, you know. And so I know, you know, the general population doesn't have any empathy for people in prison because they've been conditioned to believe that these people belong there. And so you have so many people who don't belong there, who were not criminals, who were not lifelong criminals involved in violent crime or anything. They're just regular old people. All right. And so they end up in prison and then they become victims of rape. And that's just sick, man. That's just sad. And yeah, you know, you can put it on the criminals who are doing the raping, but what the hell do you expect from rapists like Daniel Holesclaw? I fully expect this man to go into prison and rape some little, you know, a prisoner who can't defend himself. And so, you know, people want to say he going to become somebody's, you know, and I try to keep my language clean on this program, but saying he's going to be somebody's girlfriend or whatnot, you know, no, I'm not looking at it like that. Again, this is a big dude. And if he aligns himself with the white supremacist gangs that's in the prison, I don't think he'll have to worry about that. All right. I think that he will be the one that's raping people. So, you know, at least he has that right. If he goes to prison for the rest of his life, he can still continue to rape people because, you know, the prison guards, the plantation overseers, they are not there to protect those people, even though whenever a person is in custody of the police, the neo-slave catchers, whenever they're in custody of the prisons, their safety is in the hands of the state or the county, if it's a county jail or that officer. And so they don't care, man. They don't care. We have former prison guards that we have interviewed and who have become new abolitionists who worked on the inside, and they was like, man, I couldn't believe what was going on and I could not be a part of this. I just can't be a part of this. And they quit. But they have told us, you know, it's just as bad in the prisons. And I'm glad I said that. That's another thing that I want to talk about when I play this clip for Harriet. You know, but again, I just want to make the point known or the facts known that rape is rampant in these prisons, man. It's rampant in these prisons. So if you have not heard, here is the jury reading the verdict.
Verdict, count one, sexual battery. We the jury and panel that is sworn in the above entitled cause do upon our oaths find as follows. The defendant is guilty of the crime of sexual battery and set punishment of 8 years. Count two. The defendant is guilty of the crime of procuring lewd exhibition and punishment is set at 5 years. The defendant is not guilty of the crime of rape in the second degree. The defendant is guilty of the crime of forcible oral sodomy and punishment is set at 20 years. The defendant is not guilty of the crime of indecent exposure. The defendant is guilty of the crime of forcible oral sodomy and punishment is set at 16 years. The defendant is guilty of the crime of rape in the first degree and punishment is set at 30 years. The defendant is guilty of the crime of rape in the first degree and punishment is set at 30 years. Count 30, sexual battery. The defendant is guilty of the crime of sexual battery. Let me ask the jury, is this your verdict, so say you all? Counsel, would you like to examine the verdict forms?
All right, so that's the end of the clip. Did y'all hear him crying like a rape victim? I'm sure that's how his victims were sobbing and crying and shaking and wondering if anybody was going to believe them. Like, you know, one of the victims said she called the police and said, who do you call when the police assault you? You know, and that's a good question. Who do you call? Who do you call? And so, you know, I have a very low opinion of law enforcement in this country because they come out of the slave patrols. of the, you know, 1500s, 1600s and whatnot. And, you know, the first police departments was created in the mid-1600s, and their mission continued to be the same, to keep Africans enslaved on the plantation, to check the papers of free African people to make sure that they weren't enslaved African people, free black people, as, you know, a lot of people falsely believe that every black person was a slave when there were about a half a million free black people living in on this continent in 1850s. And I have very low opinion of police, not only because of their history, but what they're doing today. But I do acknowledge that, you know, you do have some people in the criminal justice system who do want to practice justice. And so I want to acknowledge the investigators in this case for doing their jobs in investigating this and whatnot. Now, there's some speculation out there that says that, you know, if it had just been the females who were, I shouldn't say females, as I was corrected by a woman, it said that females, that's like what you call animals, you know, but, you know, say women. So, you know, I don't like to be politically correct, but I will give her that one. I will respect that. I can respect that. So, what if it had just been the women who had arrest warrants out, who had criminal convictions for nonviolent drug offenses? Some people say that if it had just been those people and not the grandmother who did not have a criminal record whatsoever, that they wouldn't even believe them. So I'm going to taper my giving kudos out. All right. But it's because of the grandmother that reported it. Some people are saying, and, you know, all I can do is just tell you what's being reported, are saying that it's because of her that they looked into it. And so then, you know, I guess they made the connections and recalled that other people had made reports about Daniel Holdscroft sexually assaulting them, raping them, and whatnot. And so, they corroborated the evidence by looking at his GPS in the vehicle, because he was doing all this while he was in uniform, all right? And so they was able to see, you know, take a look at his movements by GPS and could see that he was where the women said the rape occurred at the time that the rape occurred. So you had irrefutable evidence in this case. And to be honest with you, I was looking at this cynically, as I should, because, you know, here where I live in North Carolina, they just let this cop who murdered an unarmed black college student. I think he had graduated from college or something. Jonathan Farrell. I'm trying to remember the cop's name that killed him. And the police, I mean, they did their jobs pretty quickly in Charlotte. The Charlotte Mecklenburg police, they did their jobs thoroughly. I mean, it wasn't no 1 month, 6 months, over a year, like we saw in the case of the murder of the young man in Chicago, Laquan McDonald, and then that cop sitting on desk duty while the prosecutor taking her sweet time to let all this time go by and the crime fade from memory, and then perhaps she doesn't charge him. But because of public outcry, yeah, it took her a year to charge him, man. It was only after the video was forced out into the public by a journalist that she even charged them. All right. So it didn't take Charlotte Mecklenburg police that long. They had recommended charges within 3 days. Within 48 hours, they were recommending charges against, what was that killer's name? But anyway, my whole point of saying that, despite the evidence, despite the other cops saying that this was unreasonable what he did, and they didn't cover up and lie for him, we saw a predominantly white jury not convict him, and it ended up in a hung jury. And one of the jurors was this black man who was retired from law enforcement, and he said he just couldn't believe that they did not find this man guilty of manslaughter. He wasn't even charged with first-degree murder or anything like that. They didn't overcharge him. And so it is it is based on this sort of history of these juries letting these people go when the evidence is clear. And that a lot of people were looking at this trial with skepticism when they saw it was an all-white jury in a county that at least is 30%, you know, non-white. And so they were fully expecting for a rapist cop. He didn't kill anyone, but, he committed a similarly heinous crime. And they were thinking that, hey, these people might let this dude walk. But I'm happily surprised to see that they did not let him walk. Because, you know, if they'd let him go, it wouldn't have been nothing. Wouldn't have been nothing could be done to them, you know. And so I just want to give a shout out to that all-white jury. Thank you for practicing justice, because we didn't think you could do it, but you did it in the face of irrefutable evidence. And so we just want to acknowledge. I still think that empathy testing should be required of all people that's in a jury pool. I think that should be required. We should be trying to impanel the most objective juries as possible. All right. And so we have to weed out these people who are what shall we call that, empathy challenge for non-white people. And it will go both ways. No matter what your racial classification is, taking these tests can't identify some of these preconceived biases that you have and prejudice that you have. And so what we want to do is identify the people best suited to render an objective verdict, whether, you know, they find a person innocent or guilty. But that's not what's happening here in this country. This criminal justice system is just terrible, man. It's just terrible. But, you know, in a rare case, we did get justice. Now, don't think that it's over, you know, and not that it's cause to celebrate, but some people are, you know, in a celebratory mood and whatnot. I don't think there's anything to celebrate. You know, these people, you can't unrate them victims. You know, they got to live with that for the rest of their life. And we still don't know what his sentence is going to be. And like somebody, I had shared the meme on Facebook that, you know, talked about he was going to get 263 years and whatnot. But somebody rightly pointed out that's the recommended sentence. Okay, he hasn't been sentenced yet, and it's going to be within that judge's discretion on how many years he eventually gets. So he could end up with his little ass. Well, I think, you know, there's mandatory minimum on the rape, felony rape charges. So, you know, I think in the very least he's going to do 30 years on one of those charges. But she's right, though. Thank you. No, it's not she. It's a male who made that comment on the meme. But they're right. And then I'm sure he's going to appeal the verdict. So this is just, again, you know, we're still in the early stages of the whole process. He could probably appeal this all the way up to the Oklahoma State Supreme Court. So there's still a chance that he can get away with raping people and whatnot. So, yeah, that's something to think about. Now, again, you know, what makes this especially heinous crime is because he was a law enforcement officer. And I think that people in the military, I'm former military, people, you know, that are sworn to uphold the law, when they violate the law, they should be punished, you know, far more. They should get a stiffer sentence far more than just a regular sentence. A regular person, a regular suspect, or, you know, somebody that's been convicted, because they betrayed, you know, the people's trust. Not that I trust them. You know what I'm saying? I don't trust anyone. I don't care who you are. Trust is a word that I think is thrown around lightly. Or too much, and I don't use that word. I don't trust a lot of people outside of my family, you know, because who? I don't know you. You know what I'm saying? And I even got family members I don't trust. So, you know, it is good to see. It is good to see, you know, this thus far is going in the right direction. But in terms of the victims and him targeting these victims, right, using his badge, using his uniform, using, you know, the power of the state to intimidate his victims and whatnot. Let's hear from the blogger for Harriet talk about the sexual assault of these 13 black women and why he targeted them. I think she has some interesting perspective, but I think it could be applied to more than just black women, and then I'll tell you why after we hear from her. Let me see. Man, I got to keep up with our regular station identification breaks. I'm the engineer of most of the programs, and so I'm usually watching the clock for our other hosts, but nobody's watching the clock for me. So let me go ahead and take a station identification break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News on the Black Talk Radio Network, broadcasting every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Stay tuned. We will be right back on the other side of this station ID break.
Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
All right, and we are back. Do want to remind you again that Black Talk Radio Network is managed and founded by the Black Talk Media Project, which is a North Carolina based nonprofit that was created in order to create safe digital spaces and online for black talkers like myself, and also because there is a lack of serious black media out there, you know, and so we are listener supported radio, not only radio, but all of the different media operations that we got going on, whether it's our Facebook pages, the different programs you hear on the station, whether we are assisting other independent black media producers or those who want to become independent black media producers because they see that there is a lack of serious black media that isn't entertainment based in their community, where they ain't, where they're talking about more than dating and more than celebrities, and they're having, you know, conversations or dialogue or disseminating important information about important issues. So we are listener supported. We are a North Carolina based nonprofit. Please consider it. Make a donation today. Tax season coming up. You might can write it off on your taxes, even though we're a state nonprofit. Check with your tax advisor to see if you're not in North Carolina, if you can write it off on your taxes. The reason we're not a federal, we don't have a 501c3 is because we don't want them federal strings attached. We don't plan on getting grant money from the federal government or any corporations or anything like that because, you know, we want to maintain our independence. And so we are supported by you, the listener. So this is for Harriet. She's a blogger. You can also find them on Facebook, their Facebook page for Harriet. And she is she posted a video that's titled "Why Everyone Should Care About the Daniel Holzclaw Trial."
This case brings together every vulnerability that makes black women particularly vulnerable to state-sanctioned violence and, in particular, sexual abuse. The fact that Daniel Holzclaw could possibly think that he could get away with raping 13 or more black women tells us everything we need to know about the fact that black women are vulnerable, they're not believed, our communities don't often feel comfortable speaking to sexual abuse that black women face. So this has got to be the case that shows us, number one, that we can't afford to talk about state-sanctioned violence without talking about rape. It should also tell us that we can't afford to exclude black women for our movement, within our movement of accountability. And we can't afford to let the rapes of black women not be a national issue. There should be thousands of people here demanding accountability, and there should be media here to ensure that it happens.
And so that was for Harriet. If you're on Facebook, just type in the search engine on Facebook for Harriet. If you want to follow their Facebook pages, I'm sure if you type that in a Google or Yahoo search engine, you'll be able to find their blog. I don't want to give out the wrong web address for that, so just do your Google. Several things I want to touch upon that she said, that she mentioned. I did notice, like a lot of other people, not that I noticed, but I'm going to take other people's word for it. Because I'm going to be honest with you, I do not spend a lot of time watching corporate news media. Do I have access to the cable news channels and whatnot? Yes, I do. Now, I will tune in to those, you know, from time to time, but they are not my main source of information because I know they tell a whole lot of lies. I know the history of media in this country. And so I couldn't tell you how little or how much coverage was given to the Daniel Holzclaw case. I certainly know from me scanning it from time to time, as other members of my household will be watching it, and I might come through and I'll sit down and say, you know, what they talking about and whatnot, or something, you know, catches my attention that they're reporting on or they're having a discussion on. But from those, you know, sporadic times that I was watching, I did not see Daniel Holzclaw trial being mentioned a whole lot. Now, I can't even recall seeing one segment on television about it. I just did not. Now, the news websites, of course, the local news in Oklahoma City was going to cover it and whatnot. And a lot of, you know, the online-based media, they did a pretty good job of covering it because that's where I was getting all my news from, is from, you know, like everybody else, like the majority of people, through social media, people sharing links to different news articles, to whether that is a corporate-owned website or whether it's an independent blogger or you know. So they have been mentioning that, you know, it was like very, very little coverage of the Daniel Holzclaw case. Now, you take that and compare it to the George Zimmerman trial. George Zimmerman, of course, the neighborhood so-called watch captain, wannabe cop, couldn't be a cop, so he became a watch captain in his neighborhood, and he murdered Trayvon Martin. Now, you think about all the attention that that case got. All right, now, it might have something to do with you had a bunch of college students go down there and shut down that town by engaging in nonviolent civil disobedience and forcing them to file charges against George Zimmerman, which we did find out some cops. Again, I'm not against all cops. There are some cops that actually want to practice justice and do their jobs, okay? And you did have the investigating detective recommending charges, murder charges against George Zimmerman. We did a lot of coverage of that case and whatnot. So, you know, that got a lot of media coverage. Daniel Holzclaw trial did not get a lot of media coverage. I have seen more coverage of, what was that, the white girl's name, Natalie something, they went missing in Aruba, and she was believed to have been murdered by that white male, Rich Vander something, I can't recall his name. He did eventually get convicted of killing this other woman in Peru, I think that's in Peru. But I seen more, not Natalie Holloway, I think is what her name was. I have seen more coverage of Natalie Holloway than I seen of this trial, of this serial rapist, Daniel Holzclaw, Oklahoma City cop. So, you know, I see where these people are coming from and why they, when they're asking the question, why, you know, why wasn't this newsworthy? You know, why hasn't that gotten enough attention? It could have to do with there were not enough, you know, demonstrations, even though there were some demonstrations there in Oklahoma City and whatnot, but there were like no huge marches, no huge demonstrations, no huge protests. We didn't see it on video. You know, I guess he wasn't, you know, into voyeurism to where he was recording his victims, as some people, you know, actually do get, are into that type of stuff. So I imagine if some videos came out like that, man, that, you know, people would have been out in the street. So I don't know. I can't answer that question of why news producers did not feel like that was newsworthy. I did see some today. I saw a little short segment on it today. I think it was on CNN today. Now, the thing about, and I've heard this before, and I hear this a lot from the feminist community. This whole notion about black women, black victim, black women being included in these accountability movements. When have black women not been included in these accountability movements? Because I remember interviewing several organizers back when little 7-year-old Ayanna Jones Stanley was murdered by Joseph Weekly. I ain't going to say murdered. I'm going to call it manslaughter. Reckless, you know, disregard for human life. I don't think he planned on, at least I can't prove or seen any evidence that he planned to murder the people when they broke into the wrong house and little 7-year-old Ayanna sleeping on the couch got shot in the head and whatnot. A lot of people demonstrated. There was a celebrity that I actually interviewed. I can't recall her name. I interviewed so many people since 2007. I can't recall all the people I talked to and interviewed. But she was, I think she had a couple of appearances on the Cosby Show. She's also one of the Cosby accusers and whatnot. And so I remember interviewing her as she traveled from New York to Detroit to participate in the marches and demonstrations for justice for little Ayanna Jones Stanley, Rekia Boyd. You know, I can name a whole lot of victims, of black female victims, that people were just as outraged as they were outraged for the male victims. So this whole notion that, you know, and I feel like that's purposely being done as a feminist tactic to cause division in the black community. Do your research. Read what Asada Shakur wrote about the feminist movement and its role in the system of racism and whatnot. And so I just see that as a dividing tactic. You know, when they start talking about, well, what about transgender lives? And what about this? And what about black women? And what about, why is it all about black males? It ain't all about black males. We do not control the media in this country. We are not the news producer sitting behind a desk or in a meeting room planning out what Don Lemon is going to talk about, what Al Sharpton is going to talk about, what, you know, Sean Hannity is going to talk about. We don't decide who gets coverage, okay? We don't decide. But for people to act like that men, women, and children have not been turning out and demonstrating when these women are unjustly murdered and killed in the street, that's just a doggone lie, and you need to stop it. Don't say we need to make them a part of the accountability movement, because they already part of it. They are already part of it, you know? And it's mostly black women who are leading it. And I have some thought, and I, you know, who are being promoted as the leaders of it. Now, I don't think because you're a mother and your son gets gunned down or your daughter gets gunned down by a killer cop or some other criminal, that automatically puts you into leadership status to lead a movement and whatnot. No, 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 no. If you wasn't caring about these issues before it affected you personally, and you haven't taken the time out to educate yourself on these issues and know the ins and outs and whatnot, or, you know, you don't have the right people around you to advise you, then, you know, I don't look at you as being no leader. I just see you as a showcase victim on television, because, you know, your child was murdered. That don't make you a leader. But some of those women have stepped up to the plate. I do think that they exhibit leadership qualities, And so why you not going to them women and saying, we, you know, come on, y'all. This is a tactic of divide and conquer. And, you know, to the chagrin of even some people in the black community, I have stated that, you know, we also need to raise hell when these unarmed white kids and people get gunned down. When we have video like the video out of Texas where, you know, even though they said it was a domestic violence incident, well, you know, I don't think that you hitting someone is an executable offense. I don't think you should get the death sentence for punching a woman in the face. I don't think that's, you know, I think you should be punished, but I don't think you should be executed for that, okay? And so, you know, we had the case of the white male in Texas with his hands up, and a black man was the one who recorded it and put it out there and whatnot, and it hasn't gotten a whole lot of attention because they don't want to alert white people, the masses of white people in this country, as to how much they're getting gunned down in these streets by these killer cops and whatnot. And so I have said, you know, like Mr. Neely Fuller has said, it's not about skin color. It's not about black versus white. Now, that doesn't mean that we abandon our culture or we're looking to make alliances with other people. But I think, though, strategically, because I'm involved in media, I think it would serve the movement for accountability well if we highlight the cases of these white people getting gunned down by these cops over nonviolent drug crimes, like the little 18-year-old white boy in South Carolina, Zachary Hammond, you know, and many people I know, that family's attorney, want to come out and say, well, where are the Black Lives Matter people at? Well, where the heck is the All Lives Matter people? Don't Zachary Hammond lives matter, or only police lives matter? Or maybe you just saying that because you want to be an antagonist and you a suspected racist, and that's why you want to come up and say All Lives Matter, which I did use the All Lives Matter tag when I uploaded the video of Daniel Holzclaw crying and shaking like a rape victim. Like he was the one who just got raped or something, you know. But I do think it's strategic. I think it's strategic and just being, you know, truthful and informing people. You know, I care about justice. It ain't about black versus white in this instance, what we're talking about. It's about justice versus non-justice, as Mr. Neely Fuller, the counter-racist scholar, says. All right. But. Getting back to what she was saying, though, about why he preyed upon these women. Well, because they're black, that's a strike against them in this society. They were poor, that's strike number two against them in this society. And three, they were women. And women are mistreated in this country. Let's just be real about that. All right, I am not saying feminists don't have a reason to be upset. But don't point your anger at us. Because when we don't care what the gender is of these victims, if we take a look at their cases and the evidence shows that they were murdered unjustly by these cops, well, not that you can justly murder someone, but you know, you get the gist of what I'm saying here. It doesn't matter to me. I can speak for myself. It don't matter to me. I publicize all cases, just like I publicize and share your video for Harriet, even though I ain't agree with everything you said. 100% agreement isn't necessary, and you did make some very valid points. But I just want to point out that we shouldn't be trying to divide the justice movement by gender and making false accusations and saying that the people out there in the streets, again, a lot of them women, probably the majority of them are women, don't care about women being killed by these cops and whatnot. That's patently false, and the evidence that I have seen does not suggest that at all to me. But she is correct in saying that they were targeted because they are at the bottom rung of American society, if you want to call it American society, white supremacist society, white dominated society, whatever you want to call it. So they got those three strikes against them: being black, being poor, being women. All right. And so that is why lot of people, and I think they are right in their analysis, that that's why he targeted them, because he didn't think that they would, one, report him, or two, anybody would believe them. And it was probably like that in the beginning. I don't know when the first rape victim reported him. And it could have been that these cops and investigators didn't believe him, because, oh, you're just an old drug addict, crackhead, whatever. You know, hell, you sell your body on the street. Why do you care? You know, if somebody come and take it, you should be used to it. You know, just all kind of, man, don't think I'm making this up. I'm sure these things have been said to these women and whatnot. And so, but then when a woman with respectability, because she's a grandmother, she's never been convicted of a crime or anything like that, then they start taking a serious look at it. So I do agree that, you know, they're like the homeless. We can even throw out the racial classification. Homeless people. Don't nobody really care about homeless people outside of the people that's trying to house the homeless and feed the homeless. All right? But most of society don't care about the homeless, because if they really did, they would be out there demonstrating and protesting in the streets when these politicians, these crooked politicians, immoral politicians, pass laws and ordinances against feeding the homeless and whatnot. That's, I mean, come on, man. And you call yourself a Christian nation and you going to criminalize feeding the homeless? Get real. You know what I'm saying? Get real. And so, but I'm bringing all that up to point out to you, and this is something that we have reported on this station primarily through New Abolitionist Radio. That's our radio program that focuses on 21st century slavery and human trafficking. And we have pointed out that rape is rampant, not just in the male prisons, but in the women prisons, the prisons for women. And we have reported several cases. There's one out of Michigan that happened this year where the prison guards were hog tying these women, stripping these women naked, hog tying them, leaving them on the cell floor, or on that cold floor, sometimes days at a time, hog tied, and then just raping them at will and doing whatever they wanted to these women. Why? Because they're in prison. And nobody cares, and they shouldn't have been smoking that meth, and they wouldn't have been in prison. Or they shouldn't have been standing on the corner selling their bodies so that they can, you know, pay their rent or feed their children, since, you know, this society doesn't want to help the poor and whatnot, and make you jump through all these hoops to get food assistance and whatnot. So they shouldn't have been selling their bodies to, you know, other grown people. In exchanging money between consenting adults. They shouldn't have been doing that, you know, because we're a moral society. We don't allow that unless you're in prison, and then they can just, you know, do whatever the heck they want to do to you, because nobody cares about slaves. Again, taking it back to the 13th Amendment. We convict you of a crime, whether it should have been classified as a crime or not. That doesn't matter. We got enough votes to criminalize this people activity that people been engaged in for thousands of years, not harming anyone else. But, you know, we want to pretend like we so moral and righteous, you know, and then once we put you into slavery, because the Constitution says we can enslave you as punishment for crime, and nobody cares once you're in there. You're a slave, man. You're worthless. Well, you're not worthless to the private prison companies. You're not worthless to the prison guards or the police, you know, who are profiting or depend on this system to even have a job and whatnot. But again, I go off on these tangents, but there are several stories like that out of California, where those women were being forcefully sterilized and even tricked into being sterilized. People want to talk about eugenics and whatnot and like that was a thing of the past, like that's a thing of the past. No, it's going on to this day. We have even had federal judges and whatnot advocate for sterilizing women because they felt like the women had too many children. Well, maybe they did have too many children, but you don't have the right to forcefully sterilize a person. You know what I'm saying? What kind of Hitler crap is that? Well, I shouldn't put it all on Hitler, because Hitler and the Nazis came to America to study racism and white supremacy so that they could refine it and fine-tune it and then take it back over there to Europe. And all of this was going on right here before the Nazis was even an ideal in some lunatic's mind, right? And it's still going on, right? And then there's the other stories we have reported on women being forced to give blowjobs for tampons in prisons. See, these are sick people, man. This is the sick society that we live in that you don't want to pay attention to, but I'm intent on pulling the covers back on all of this ugliness. You don't want to pay attention to it. But if you pay attention to this network, if you tune in to this radio program, I am not going to be the politically correct person and not acknowledge that this is one of the most evil places on the planet. It is not the land of the free and the home of the brave. All right. It's not. That's just propaganda. All right. It's the home of the sick enslavers. That's what it is. Home of the warmongers. Home of the rapists. So anyway, that I want to put the focus on all rape victims that's in prisons. When the judge handed down their sentence for, you know, having a half a pound of weed that they growed in their backyard and whatnot, you know, because they were soldiers trying to treat their PTSD, and a lot of people don't know, but it's up to 1 million veterans in prison. And from the research that I did, I estimated about 500,000 of them are in there for nonviolent drug crimes, right? So I want to put the focus on the victims that's in prison. When they were sentenced for trying to treat their PTSD with whatever drug they were using, I don't think part of that sentence was being raped, subject to rape in prison. I don't think they said, you know, 10 years of rape, that's what I'm handing down. You shouldn't have been smoking weed. You shouldn't have been smoking crack. Now I'm sentencing you to 10 years of rape on a prison plantation. No, I don't think. And then the people get infected with AIDS and whatnot in the prison. Man, that's a crime. That's a crime of the state. And so, again, what do we need law enforcement for? They don't stop any crimes. All they do is respond to it like a fireman. You know, my house is on fire. I call the fire department. Hopefully, they'll get out there in time. That's all cops do. That's all they do in terms of addressing real crime. Rest of their time, they out there writing tickets and trying to bust people, you know, on nonviolent drug offenses or other, you know, offenses like prostitution or victimless crimes, you know, victimless crimes, or they're when they ain't out there busy raping people, you know what I'm saying? What need do we have of them? If you can't even stop people from being raped in prison by prison guards, then come on now. Come on. How are you going to keep people safe out here on the street? See, y'all give the police too much credit. So that's the sick society that we live in where, you know, rape is just rampant. Again, I'm former military, and I ain't got a problem with telling you that I told my daughters who thought they were going to follow in my footsteps and join, you know, the U.S. military, and I told them for college money or whatnot, like I did, and I told them, you know, you can't go in the military. If you was my son, then I might would think about allowing you to go. But, well, not that I can stop them. Once they're 18, they're 18. They can make their own decision. I definitely would have talked them out of it or tried to talk them out of it like I ended up talking my daughters out of joining the military. And I didn't use the conscious argument on them and saying, well, you know, soldiers are nothing but pawns on a chessboard in a global war. All right. Pawns, they are just pawns, man. You ain't fighting for nobody's liberty. You ain't fighting for nobody's freedom. Because if that was true, then the United States wouldn't have the world's largest prison population. They wouldn't. And people wouldn't be getting put in jail for growing weed or smoking meth. They would be free. They would be free. Hey, they say, what does the preamble or the Constitution say? You know, liberty and justice or the pursuit of happiness and all that. If crack make you happy, then who am I to deny your pursuit of smoking crack? Long as you ain't breaking into my house to steal stuff to buy crack. Because then you do need to go to jail. You do need to be reported and whatnot. But if you got a job or, you know, however you will obtain your money without stealing from somebody else, you want to go buy some crack, who am I to stand in your way? I'm not going to call the police on you because I definitely don't want to pay here in the state of North Carolina. I think it's what, $60,000 a year to house a prisoner. You know, I don't want my taxes going towards nothing like that. All right. So just recognize, man, that there are a lot of people who are suffering in this country. If we want to talk about rape, ain't nobody being raped more than people in prison. And that should not be. That should not be. And we have to pay attention and we have to stop looking at people just because they're in prison like they belong there or something. They don't belong there. Most of the people that belong, a lot of the people that belong there are not there. How many of them bankers that ripped off all them people and investors and whatnot and then got bailed out, you know, a second robbery of the American taxpayer? How many of them went to prison? Huh? How many of them bankers that got busted laundering billions, not a million, not a 10 million, not 20 million, not 100 million, billions in drug money for the Mexican drug cartels? How many of them went to prison? None of them, because guess what? All they did was enter into a deferred prosecution agreement, paid a fine, which only represented a very small portion of their drug profits. Excuse me. You know, only represents just a percentage of their drug profits. They didn't take it all. And then they get to stay out of jail. See, though, people that really need to be in prison, they not in prison. They not in prison. Dick Cheney, not in prison. Hillary Clinton, not in prison. So, stop looking at people in prison as if they deserve to be there, number one. And number two, that it's okay for them to be raped on the mass scale that they are being raped. And again, with the military, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry about that. But I was talking about the military and my daughters, right? And I told my daughters, do you know how many women are being raped in the military? When I was in the military, there was a case of sexual assault on a female he was a sergeant first class who took advantage of this private, this woman who had just joined the military, very young, and, you know, he just abused her, man. He just abused her. So I saw that happen firsthand, you know, a case like that. And I took them to look at the video about PFC Lavina Johnson, who was raped in the military, and then they killed her, and then the Army ruled it as a suicide, even though it would have been impossible to kill herself in the manner that she killed herself. And I showed her all the other females or the women that, you know, that were killed after they had complained about rape and stuff. And I told them about the stories, even at these military academies and whatnot, the rape and the sexual harassment. And that was enough right there to keep my daughters from joining the military, because rape is also rampant in the military. And it's not just happening against women in the military, but men as well. Do your research, people. Men and women are being raped in the military. This isn't a pretty place that we live in. And we need to stop lying to ourselves or allowing other people to lie to us and think that we're talking about honorable people doing a profession that's honorable and all this and that. No, it's not. Some of the people in there are doing it for the right reasons, but most of the people, from what I can see, they are part of the conspiracy. Because even if you're not doing something and you know of somebody else doing something and you don't report it, then you have conspired, okay, by your lack of action to cover up the crime. So you're a criminal in my book. And that's the majority. That's the majority of people, not the minority. So I am so glad that my daughters decided not to go into the military. So again, I missed my break. Go ahead and move on to the next story. Let me check our conference line and see if we got any phone calls before we move on. Caller 650, hang on. I'm going to take another short station identification break, kick some message music right quick, and then we'll come back and you will be first. Well, you are the only one that's in queue right now. If you would like to make a comment, ask me a question, share an observation. Again, let me give out those numbers before we go to the break. Studio line 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. The other way is the conference line at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032#. That's how Brother Dave say it. And then hit *6#1. And also, if you are tuning in through the video blab chat, you can do that as well. You can chime in that way. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed. We will be back on the other side.
What is racial showcasing? That means taking huge numbers of black people and putting them out front. There's going to be more of this all over the planet. Many, many millions of black people that you will see who will be rolling in money. They'll be able to showcase the places where they live. They'll be able to showcase their knowledge and expertise. So you have television now, you have all of the mediums for doing this, for showcasing huge numbers of black people. I will say it will eventually run into the millions, so many that you won't be able to count them. Now, what is this for? This is for any black person that starts talking about racism in the future is going to be laughed at, because they're going to be able to showcase so many black people who are what you call quote unquote successful that it will seem that racism has been put out of business. But white supremacy is a world business, and like any other business, it works on profits and losses, which means percentages. You go into business, you expect a certain amount of loss. If you're in the grocery business, well, you might have a load of asparagus that is full. But overall, you will make more profits than you have losses if you're going to stay in the business. Now, so the white supremacists know that the cost of doing the business of white supremacy is going up. They can no longer get away with Joe Louis and Lena Horne like they did years ago. They have to have many, many, many more black people who are going to be showcased. I made up this term just to explain it. You have to make up terms, because they won't make them up for you. So now that's the first phase, or one of the first elements in the maximum confusion. And so that black people won't be able to see.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in for this broadcast. Before I go to the phones, I just want to address something that was posted in the video chat room. A question was asked by @57June. I think that's how you pronounce it. What about the kid trafficking for the rich and elite pedophiles? Certainly, that form of slavery and human trafficking does exist, but the thing is, it's already illegal. See, if those people get caught, they will be prosecuted. That is, of course, unless they got connections and stuff like that to the Bush family. And don't even get me started on George Bush and Boys Town and that history there. Lincoln, Nebraska. Do your research on that. But yeah, it is still a very huge market. I believe that is what's happening to a lot of these people who we see ending up missing. A lot of black women especially are missing in this country, but people of all different classifications, racial classifications, religious classifications, socioeconomic status end up missing. in this country. So there is a huge so-called underground human trafficking, whether it's involving sex, whether it's involving sexual slavery or you know, slavery for manual labor and whatnot. But that's already illegal. That's already outlawed. That's already on the books. Those people, if found out, can be prosecuted in terms of what I'm talking about, 13th Amendment slavery, constitutionalized slavery. That's legal because of that loophole. That's legal. So that's the difference. What you're questioning, what you're asking about and bringing up, which we do want to acknowledge that because it is very ugly. I mean, it just adds to the perversion that we see all throughout this country. So that's very valid point. But I'm just saying the difference is that that's already deemed illegal. Whereas once they convict you of a crime and can punish you with slavery and put you on a slave plantation, then anything goes. They can work you for 10 cents, you know, an hour, or if they pay you anything at all. Sometimes some of these people ain't being paid nothing at all. In fact, they're trying to make the prisoner pay, you know. And some people get out of jail with a bill. That's crazy, man. That's crazy. And they shouldn't even been there to begin with. So that's the difference there. Let's go to the phone line. Thank you for hanging in there so patiently.
What's
area code 650. Who do we have on the line?
Brother Red would say to you, tell the truth, from Cali.
What's up, brother?
What's up, Brother Scotty? You ain't playing today, huh?
I try not to play any day, but...
right. You went in today on this Friday, though. No break. All gas. Yeah, man, with the ladies, with that cop, man, they all need to be compensated. Mm-hmm. And then the other victims need to come on and step out around the world, you know? Because it's a mess. And I salute you for lacing your daughters up, not to go in a slave camp and fight for these people. You know?
Most definitely.
And they care more. And the situation you said about the homeless, they care more about a dog than, you know, they ain't gonna let a dog lay on the ground.
Mm-mm. Nope.
It's a mess, man.
Yes, it is, man. But I agree with the point that you're making. And I don't know what, you know, the laws are in the state of Oklahoma. But they should all file lawsuits because I'm sure, you know, because sometimes victims do get compensated and whatnot through, you know, the court system. They get compensated for. But I'll tell you, man, they need to sue. They need to file a personal injury lawsuit against them, man.
They victim of crimes.
Yeah. Yeah, they you know? Victims. Reparations.
Yeah.
They should get reparations. This slave catcher, you know, raped them.
Yeah, and they need to sue him, too.
Yeah, sue him, too, unless he, you know, had immunity.
Because the court's going to make him pay. He going to pay a bunch of court fees, so pay the victim fees, too.
Mm-hmm. I agree, man. We in 100% agreement on that, man. But, I mean, what are your thoughts, though? As I mentioned earlier, the process ain't over. He ain't been sentenced. And then he still has appeals that he can appeal, you know, appeal his verdict. So it's still not over.
Right.
Ain't no reason for nobody to be celebrating and saying justice has been done. No, justice ain't been done.
Yeah, but it take a while for them appeals, Scotty.
Yeah.
He gonna be sitting a while for them appeals. But, you know, we just got to keep our fingers crossed. I hope he do get the match, you know. He deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah. He does deserve it. And, again, this could have went the other way. So I just want to acknowledge that, you know, I was shocked that an all-white jury had empathy, apparently, for these black victims, because that's the way that's why he chose them. He was banking on them not having empathy if it ever came to this, and they convicted them.
Scotty, you think we've been doing enough ramping and raging?
Do you think we've been doing enough?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you think some of the jury might have, you know, been looking at all these protests and marches or something.
And they didn't want that to happen to their city?
Yeah, or maybe they just enlightened, you know, paying attention or something.
Right.
That too.
Who knows, man? Maybe some of them will give an interview and they'll share their thoughts, but your guess is as good as mine. Maybe some of them already were empathetic. Maybe, you know, we don't know how many, I don't know how many women was on the jury, so they was, you know, identifying,
right,
them, you know, with them as being fellow women and whatnot, or who knows, man, who knows, but I'm glad that they did come to the right verdict based on the evidence.
Right, right. Good show, Scotty.
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and move on. I'm going to clear the queue. If you have something else you would like to add later on, just hit *6 and 1 again. But thank you for calling in and sharing your thoughts.
For sure, Scotty.
Okay, let me go ahead and clear the queue. Now, I want to move. Again, I had only planned to be on an hour, but I get to talking, and time just goes by fast, but that's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for. I know I got a whole lot of work to do. I want to get on this client's website because they've been waiting for like 6 days, and it took 5 days for GoDaddy to even transfer the domain to my server. So I'm just anxious to get started, but this is my regular job, this media, producing this media through the Black Talk Media Project, so I shouldn't say, man, look at the time. That's what I'm here for, right? Okay, so the next story that I want to talk about is this poor little rich girl. When I say poor, I'm not talking about impoverished because she comes from a wealthy family. I'm talking about Abigail, what is her name? I don't want to open up my profile page on Black Talk Radio Network. Let me see if I can just do a quick Google search and find a story that way. Abigail Fisher. Yeah, that's her name, Abigail Fisher. This is a wealthy white woman who filed a lawsuit against the University of Texas because they declined giving her a slot, right? They declined admitting her. So she filed a lawsuit, right? Abigail Fisher. There is a good article on Salon.com that really gives you some background information on who she is as a person. She did not even qualify herself to be admitted. Her grades, she didn't, it's not like, what's the perfect score on the SAT? 600, 700? It ain't like she scored 700. She barely passed it, right? She barely passed it. She didn't, wasn't up to the academic standards. So she assumed that all these other black people and non-white people that did get in, oh, they got in because of affirmative action. They, you know, because black people were stupid and they possibly couldn't do well on the SAT. You know, even though I went to a predominantly white school here in North Carolina, and I scored the second highest on the SAT in a predominantly white school. But, oh, we, you know, we're not capable of such academic success and whatnot because, you know, our skulls are made different and you know, there's just something about us. We just stupid. Yeah, you know. So she assumed that these were dumb niggers. And she couldn't, and they couldn't possibly have gotten into school on their own merits. And then, as it turns out, that the most of the people, the majority of the people who got into UT that did not meet the so-called academic standards, the majority of them was poor white kids. They didn't have a rich daddy and a mama, or they didn't come from money like Abigail Fisher. They were poor and whatnot, probably lived in a Texas trailer park somewhere and whatnot, in a meth infested, you know, community and whatnot, and they just was trying their best to escape the poverty, and they didn't have the grades, but, you know, they volunteered for a lot of stuff in their community. You know, they was like volunteering at the homeless shelter and you know, Toys for Tots, and even though they were poor, they were still out there trying to help the poor and through various community organizations. And so that's why, you know, UT said, oh, okay, you don't meet the academic standards, but we see that you were heavily involved in your community. You also were involved in the glee club and the chess club and had these extracurricular activities going on and, you know, civic club and all of that. So we think you have potential, and we think that you, if you are allowed to come here and you're taken away from all those distractions in that trailer park, that your grades will come up. because you've already shown the type of character that you have. And so, you know, we want to give you an opportunity to come to school here. Now, again, the majority of the people who did not meet the academic standards were poor white people. But Abigail Fisher and her attorneys wanted to focus on only black people. They wanted to play the race card and come up with this debunked science that, you know, Scalia and others is talking about, saying that when black people do get into these universities, oh, we just flunk out, you know, or we don't succeed. And you know, like every white, like no white people are dropping out of college. You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on, you know. So this is the disgusting person that we're dealing with here. She sounds like a person who thought her being wealthy, or her family being wealthy, she's probably used to having everything she ever asked them for and just having her way. And she might have even, you know, been voted captain this, captain that, cause she wealthy and people want to be down with the rich girl and whatnot. And you know, to be in that clique, that Valley Girl Club or whatever and whatnot. And so, you know, instead of her taking a route, like I told my daughters, and I didn't tell my daughters not to enroll in Johnson C. University, or what was the other one? The A&T University, another black college and whatnot. But I didn't tell them to not go there because, you know, they couldn't get in. They met the standards academically and whatnot. I couldn't afford it. And I was not going to go into debt. I was not going to mortgage the house and all this and that and go in debt like that. And then they be sitting around like my sister, you know, who was about 5 years younger than me. And she's still in her 40s paying off student loan debts. And so I was like, no, we're not going to do that route. This is what you're going to do. You're going to go to my alma mater. You're going to go to Central Piedmont Community College. You're going to, or go to Gaston College for 2 years, okay, and get all of your main credits and stuff out of the way, and then transfer to Johnson C. Smith University, then transfer to A&T University. Then that way, you know, you won't be saddled, and we won't be saddled with all of that debt, because you'll knock off half of it at community college. Now, for those that couldn't get in academically, like Abigail Fisher, a lot of times what they will do is they will go that route too. It's not that they don't, you know, they worried about the student debt, although they should, but they couldn't get in academically. So what they do is they go to community college, and then they bring their grades up, and then they attempt to get in and transfer to those schools and get in that way. No, that ain't what Abigail Fisher did. What do you mean? Do you know who my parents are? Do you know what color my skin is? And I bet you that black person over there don't deserve to be here, and they're just here because of affirmative action. Let's take a listen to this man. You know, she's still young. I'm hoping that there's time for her to grow up, but more than likely she won't. More than likely, these are the lack of values that have not been instilled in her. She doesn't have any values or any morals or anything like that. She thinks that everything is set aside for her, and if she didn't get it, then, you know, she throws a tantrum. And that's what I'm looking at this lawsuit is. This is a white girl tantrum, a rich white girl tantrum.
I'm very, very humbled and grateful that the justices of the Supreme Court have decided to hear my case again today. My family and I are deeply thankful that Mr. Ryan and his associates have continued to represent me all these years. And we are also thankful for the unwavering support of Edward Bloom. Like most Americans, I don't believe that students should be treated differently based on their race. Hopefully, this case will end racial classifications and preferences in admissions at the University of Texas. Thank you.
We have said in our briefs, and certainly we've said all along, that race is an odious classification. And it really doesn't matter if your results are small. That sort of indicates you didn't have to do it in the first place. So to do it for reasons that are not compelling and are not established by the evidence and were not the basis of decision is inappropriate. That's what our briefs have said. That's what we told the court today. We haven't changed at all our position.
Now, there's some key things that you should have picked up there. The last thing that he said it doesn't matter that, you know, a lot of people, black people, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, obviously, but it doesn't matter that, you know, this isn't resulting in, you know, a whole lot of black people getting admitted into UT that didn't have the academic standards or whatnot. So they was admitted and other things were taken into consideration because we, you know, want diversity or we want to give poor people a chance. Like they gave all them white poor kids and whatnot, you know. So it's not like affirmative action is really benefiting black people that much, because it's not. It's not like 20, you know, University of Texas has 30%, let's say 30% of the students there, the student body at the University of Texas is non-white because of affirmative action. No, that ain't what happened. It's like maybe 1%. Something like that, if even that much. So that's what he was talking about when he was saying it doesn't matter that, you know, a whole bunch of black people aren't getting in because of affirmative action. It's because, you know, we shouldn't be using racial classifications and whatnot. And whatnot. Look, we didn't invent racial classifications. All right. You should read the book. I would recommend people read the book, The Invention of the White Race, by Jeffrey Perry. And whatnot. It is an eye opener. But it's too late now. That ship has sailed. And so how do we know you practicing racism if you do away with racial classification? Now I'm reminded of that story in Texas where they were required by law, because they were targeting black people, that a law was passed that they had to start recording the racial classification of the people that they were stopping. And so to make it look like they weren't targeting people based on their race, they would put down white when the person they stopped was Hispanic or the person that they stopped was black. They would put down white to try to game the system. This is something we just reported on not that long ago. All right. So to do away with racial classification is to just give them a clear path to keep practicing racism, because then we won't have the statistical data to show you, you know, 13% of white people admit to using drugs, 13% of black people admit to using drugs, but yet 60% of the or more of the drug arrests are black people, when, you know, 13% of white people, 200 million plus, is a whole lot heck more than 13% of 40 million black people. So why is it then that we making up all the arrests, all the convictions, when it's by far white people are using drugs more than anyone? Again, I'm an abolitionist. I don't think anyone should be arrested for drugs, and let alone put in prison over drugs. Long as they didn't get those drugs to children, long as they didn't harm somebody else, like sell them some drugs that they knew was tainted and that person died or whatnot, then you can, you know, charge them with murder. You know what I'm saying? But I don't think drug use or even low-level selling of drugs, you know, you want to eliminate that, legalize drugs, and then nobody be dealing drugs on the street. I shouldn't say nobody, but we wouldn't have all this gang violence and whatnot. So when they talk about, when you hear suspected racists, like what we just heard, say stuff like that. Look, white women have benefited from affirmative action more than anyone. I'm going to give you two personal instances that I know about. Two that I know about. Okay. I used to work in corporate America. I was a third shift supervisor of a dye lab. I wasn't just a you know, a technician or something like that. I was over the whole lab. I was over the whole lab, right? So, I got college. I got military experience. I'm a veteran, honorable discharge, spent 6 years in the military, got mad computer skills and stuff like that. And so, come to find out, this white woman who was working second shift, do you know they hired this woman and was paying her more than me, and she didn't have, I think she just had a high school diploma, all right? She's from around this area that I live in. Lots of poor white people live in this area that I live in. And, you know, I go to the grocery store. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I think if people need help, they should get help. But I see lots of white people running around with EBT cards around here. You know what I'm saying? The thing that they like to act like only black people is using food stamps and whatnot. That's the area I live in. Used to be textiles, jobs was, you know, plenty. Now those jobs, if they went overseas and if they're coming back, they're being, you know, to put into the prisons for prison slaves to sew up Victoria's Secret's, you know, garments and whatnot. And so that's, you know, again, you know, this woman didn't have the skill, didn't have the qualification or the experience that I had. Do you know they paid this woman $10,000 a year more than me? I was angry, man. I busted my ass to get that position in that company. I started out as a technician and worked my way to the top within the company. And then you're going to hire a white woman off the street who ain't got nowhere near the qualification and job work experience that I got. And you're going to pay her $10,000 a year more than me? I went and filed a complaint at the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission in Charlotte, North Carolina. Do you know that was when I got the rude awakening that you can't file a discrimination complaint involving a white woman when you're talking about pay discrimination? You know why? Because white women have minority status under the law, under affirmative action. All right. Let me tell you another thing, you know. So, this is before I start working for that company. I'm not above any kind of work. I work with my hands. I work with my brain. It don't matter to me. I'm just trying to work. So, I was doing construction work, right? I was doing construction work. I hadn't been long out, got out the military, so I was looking for a quick job or something like that. So I got a job at this construction company. They had two, well, it was one company. It was called Holman. I remember now. It was Holman something. I think that's the name. Holman Construction. Then, so I'm working with this guy, right? We going around, you know, on different jobs and whatnot. And so then he was like, you know, we got to go over here to Linda Construction Company. I was like, who is that? Who's Linda Construction Company? Oh, that's Mr. Holman's wife, Linda Holman. And they started that company, okay, Linda Construction LLC, so that they could get affirmative action contracts from the city of Charlotte. So here you got the white man, all right, who has the company, has the construction company, and so he can undermine the program that is meant to award contracts to minority-owned firms. He starts a subsidiary, which really was just on paper, really. He starts a subsidiary, puts his wife as the CEO of this LLC, and then gets affirmative action contracts through Linda Construction Company, which they then subcontract out to Holman Construction, which is owned by the white male, who, if he had applied for those bids and whatnot, he wouldn't have been considered for affirmative action. So you see how they game in the system? A lot of black people are not benefiting from affirmative action. So if they got rid of it today, it would not have a huge impact on black people because we ain't benefiting from it in the first place. Now, there may be a very small percentage of people in the black community that may get into a college, that may start a business and get awarded a contract, a very small percentage. But most of the people that are benefiting from affirmative action are white people. I just gave you two examples, real world examples, where this is not secondhand information. This is firsthand information. from my mouth to your ears. So, isn't it also interesting that they would choose to target racial classifications under affirmative action? What about the preferential treatment given to veterans like myself? Do you know that a business will get a tax break for hiring veterans? Okay. Even though a lot of veterans is unemployed, don't ask me why, but you can get a business or a corporation can get a tax credit for hiring veterans. All right. Ain't nobody raising hell about that and saying so because he was the dummy who went off and put his life on the line for a country that don't give a damn about him and just as likely to shoot him down in the street or put him in a prison plantation. That shouldn't give him preferential treatment or hiring, you know. Because, heck, you know, I'm a hard worker, too. You know, nobody's saying that about affirmative action for based on gender. Nobody's saying that, are they? She didn't go in there and say because she couldn't. Because she already qualifies for affirmative action as a white female. So, obviously, they're not going to bring that up. And, obviously, they're not going to bring up the fact that white women are the biggest beneficiaries of affirmative action. So they ain't bring that up. Well, what's another affirmative action program they could have targeted? Well, what about alumni legacy slots? What I'm trying to say is it's a specific term for it. I just don't recall it right now. But if you, for example, this is how Bush, George W. Bush, got into Harvard and Yale. Because his father and his grandfather was a graduates. They were alumnus of those institutions. He didn't have the grades to get into Yale or Harvard Business School. But because his parent and his grandparent went to that school, he got a slot automatically for the children of alumni. Do y'all think that's right? Do you think that's being quote unquote fair? No, it's not. So she didn't go and sue them and say, I don't think that this person should get admitted to University of Texas because their father or their mother went to University of Texas. This shouldn't be based on what your parents did. This should be based solely on what you do. You know, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. And whatnot. But see, she don't want to pull herself up by her bootstraps. She want to continue to ride the wealth, the privilege of being part of the wealthy class and then being classified as white. All right? Because if she wasn't being racist about it, then they could have targeted so-called legacy slots for the children of alumnus. I don't think George Bush should have been admitted in Harvard or Yale simply because his daddy went there. He didn't have the grades to get in. Some well-deserving other person who had the grades could have got in there. But no, because his daddy went there, oh, he gets to go. Why didn't she say that about people at the University of Texas who only got in because their parents graduated from there? Nobody's getting pissed off about that, is they? Are they? No. No, what she won't do and people like her want to do is play the victim card like white people is being so mistreated in this country. Like they're losing, you know, something. Oh, I'm white. I should go to University of Texas. I've always wanted to go there and whatnot. And it's not right that this black person got in and she don't even know. They probably had better grades than her. Or they participated in community service things that got them in. And then why ain't they talking about the majority of the people who didn't have the grades to get in but got in because they were poor? And that's the white poor kids that got in. That's why this case is racist. That's why she's racist. That's why her parents are racist. That's why her attorneys are racist. Because you want to target and make it seem like all these black people got admitted into the University of Texas and you didn't, because you're not black. You want to play reverse racism card or whatever. And then that turns out to not even be the case. Again, Raw Story did an excellent piece on it. I don't recall the journalist's name, but they did an excellent write-up. Said that this girl didn't even qualify academically herself. And then white kids in her similar situation, they benefited the most. But, you know, unlike her, perhaps they volunteered to do community service all throughout their high school years, where they participated in stuff for the community and helping the community. Well, all she did was party and drink and get high and drunk and have sex. You know, the rich girl stuff. Going to concerts and dining at the best restaurants and all this and that. No, this is spoiled little rich girl, angry because she didn't get to have her way this time. And so she won't take it out on black people because they are easy targets. There's no merit to this case. But again, it don't matter to me either way. Gut affirmative action, don't gut it. It don't matter because we ain't benefiting from it anyway. You are. Man, wake up, people. Wake up. Wake up. We ain't benefiting for that. So if they, whatever they decide to do, if it goes, you know, they decide, oh, it's unconstitutional to consider these things and whatnot. And so, you know, don't get upset. Don't have a march. Don't protest. Don't do none of that. Because you ain't benefiting from it anyway. It don't matter. Don't matter. It'll just give us more evidence to show how this is a racist nation at the highest level. Anyway, I'm going to take a station identification break. I went over a little bit. See, I got about maybe 15 minutes. Oh, by the way, Race Treaty Radio will be on air tonight. They'll be talking about, again, the conference on the elimination of racism through the United Nations. I forget who the guest is tonight, but Brother Robin will be on air tonight at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. I've yet to hear from Black Rose, who is the host of the Lotus Place, but I imagine she will be on air. She was on air Friday. I mean, excuse me, she was on air Wednesday night, so I think she's done traveling, and so she should be on air tonight at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Tune in to our digital radio station. We're simulcasted throughout different platforms, TuneIn, Streamer, iTunes. So there's a number of ways you can listen to the station. So we hope that you will tune in. I'm going to take a station identification break. Throw my coffee in the microwave right quick and heat it back up. I didn't let it get cold. And then when we come back, I'll wrap it up with some news that was submitted to the website by one of the listeners or the visitors to the website about the Waco, the shootout in Waco, Texas, at the shootout at Twin Peaks. And some new information is coming out about that, which took place about a few months ago. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. We are your independent black media radio station, New Black Media for the New Millennium. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
We have to begin to move to control our community. Everything that's in your community that you don't control is a weapon against you. Public education as it exists today is a weapon against black people. TV and news media, especially the WPP, White Power Press, White People's Paper, and White People's Power, are enemies against black people. Now, what the white press does is that it makes black people an enemy of black people.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Negro collectively is richer than most nations of the world. We have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more than all of the exports of the United States and more than the national budget of Canada. Did you know that? That's power right there if we know how to prove.
We should own and operate and control the economy of our community. We have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar.
We've got to strengthen black institutions. I call upon you to take your money out of the banks downtown and deposit your money in Tri-State Bank. We are telling you to follow what we are doing. Put your money there. You have 6 or 7 black insurance companies here. Take out your insurance there. Now, these are some practical things that we can do. We begin the process of building a great economic base. We've got to give ourselves to this struggle until the end. We've got to see it through.
So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community, what we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community.
The black man must unite in one grand racial hierarchy, making a racial empire upon which the sun shall never set. Be black, by black, he's black, and all of them are
American Negro collectively is richer than most nations of the world. We have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more.
They use force on inmates. They beat up inmates. They planted evidence or weapons in cells.
If an inmate was beaten up, presumably, if he made a complaint, there had to be some sort of investigation.
It would be squashed at the management level. It wouldn't go any farther than that. It wouldn't go any farther than probably the supervisor of that yard.
Donald Boddicker is now in hiding. We had to agree his lawyer came to the interview, and we couldn't say where we met them.
Ever since I broke the code of silence, I've lost everything. I've lost friends that I had associated with the Department of Corrections. I've lost some of my family members. I've lost everything. I lost my career. I've lost financially. It's devastating. I'm on the move all the time.
Why?
Because I'm here for my life, for my life, for my life, for my life.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
And welcome back, Scotty Reed in on this broadcast. Got about a few minutes to go. I do see we have a caller on the conference line. Let me go ahead and unmute the caller. Caller, go ahead and share your question, comment, or observation.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Not going to complain too much, bro, but what's on your mind tonight?
Well, you kind of touched on something when you were speaking about the lady that, you know, was brought in and you were more qualified and,
yes,
you know, that whole dynamic. But I wanted to kind of push further than that because I wanted to ask you a question. Do you think that that's a war tactic also? Because
yes,
today it seems like the woman, they're pushing the woman, even the black women now, you know, they're pushing them and they're advancing them. They're paying them better. And it's like the brothers is getting less pay for harder work. It's like they shifted the dynamic in the household, and it's very common that nowadays that the woman brings in more money than the man.
Right.
So do you agree with that? Do you think that's a war tactic?
Yes, I agree with that. A black woman can make it further in corporate America than a black male can make. Why? Well, because who dominates corporate America? I'm asking you a question. Who dominates corporate America?
The white male.
And so what has the white male always done in relation to black females?
A melanated sister?
Yeah. What has he always done? He's always sought to sexually skewer her and whatnot. And so, I mean, she's a woman. She's a woman. And so, go ahead.
Well, so my question is, I mean, now that dynamic has clearly shifted, I mean, it's like that Hegelian dialect. It's like
right.
the problem or the cause, the problem, the cause and the solution, right. something to that effect. But it's like cause is this dynamic. And now the solution is going to be, well, I mean, we can't keep up with her now. So where will she go?
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
I think that's another war tactic, man. Just like the homosexuality, I think that this is also a war tactic because they pushing brothers down, down, down. The Spanish people, all different non-white people, they putting before us. And I'm not knocking them, but it's happening, man. And it's
yes, it
happening
is.
Before
it is.
Our eyes.
Let's call it the emasculation of the black male. Let's call it that. You
yes,
know.
Sir.
So I agree with you. Yes, it's a tactic. They find black females to be less threatening, of course, obviously, than a black male. Then there's always that sexual factor that you have to figure in. But we can't allow that to divide us in our community. You understand what I'm saying? It's happening.
Yes, sir. And that's, go ahead.
It's happening, but we can't, just like I was going back to where the feminist, I played the clip of her, and she was saying we can't leave black women out of these justice movements or accountability movement. I'm like, ain't nobody leaving black women out. What are you talking about?
My mother's a black woman.
So we're not leaving them out. So the same thing is, you know, I do think it is a tactic to emasculate the black male. And so that he will be less desirable to the black female, and you know that will lead to the destruction of the black family. So yeah, I think it's a war tactic.
Okay. Well, I don't know what to do. I mean, I can't tell everybody. I can't talk to everybody. But damn, I mean, can't tell the woman. It's bigger than this, baby. You got to read between the lines. And I'm more qualified than my wife, but she makes more money than me.
Yeah, because she is seen as less threatening in that world.
And then when you said that the first time, it made me think about that sister that they shot at the White House gate with the baby in the car. What made her so threatening?
Miriam Carey.
These people are, they climbing the gate. These white boys is running through the yard with parachutes on and everything. Nobody gets hurt. But this sister was so threatening that she had to get gunned down, man.
Yeah, and then after she left the White House, you're talking about Miriam Carey for the listeners.
Miriam Carey.
That don't know. Yeah.
Man, don't get me going, man. Scotty, I know your time is short, man. Get you some rest, man. I know you need it, brother.
I'll do the best I can, bro. Do the best I can.
Yeah, man. Keep doing what you're doing, brother.
All right. Peace to you.
Thanks for taking my call. Peace and love, man.
Peace and love to you as well, bro. Thank you for calling in. The last story, again. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it, but it isn't everything what it might seem to be. I'm talking about that Waco shooting, and I know a lot of people are saying that, and they're rightly observing that this case isn't getting a whole lot of attention because then, you know, people be forced to talk about white-on-white crime, even though, you know, that shouldn't even be mentioned at all. Black-on-black crime is a myth. White-on-white crime is a myth. Crime tends to be something of opportunity. If you stay around a whole bunch of people, you know, if you live around mostly black people, then you mostly going to be victimized by other black people. That's just a fact of life. Just like up the street from me, I live in a rural, predominantly white area. And this old white man up the street, well, about half a mile up the road, somebody broke in his house and beat him up. Turned out to be a white boy, a meth head, and whatnot. And so, you know, it's not that people are targeting people based on a racial classification, even though that does occur. But the majority of the crime is just that people are just taking opportunity, whoever's easiest, the easiest victim, whoever's closest to me, you know. Because I doubt if these white boys that live in the trailer park around here are going to go to Charlotte to break into somebody's house. No, they're going to go to one of these homeowners' house, which is mostly white people, and break into their houses. And they know not to come to this house. So they know that. All right, so I ain't worried about them. Because if they do, I got something for them. But yeah, the Waco Twin Peaks shooting and whatnot, where all of these bikers allegedly shot each other up. Well, now it's saying that four of the dead bikers and at least one of the survivors was shot by a caliber of weapon that's only used by the Waco Police Department. Now, you might say, well, what's news about that? Well, it's not really news, you know, because they're going to sit up there and say that, well, you know, they were shooting and we shot at them. You know, they were trying to kill us, and they'll spin it some kind of way, even though they ain't talking about it much and they're trying to keep it under wraps. But the ballistics have come back and they've matched the bullets in four deceased victims and one that survived, matched them to caliber weapons, semi-automatic rifles being used by the police. Who carries semi-automatic rifles? Now, I know in Cleveland at one time the police union was arguing to have an AR-15 in every squad car. That's just crazy, man. But anyway, usually those type of rifles, those type of weapons are reserved for the SWAT team, you know, a tactical unit, specialized weapons and tactical units, right? Now, again, the early reports, when I first heard about this story and started looking into it, there were a number of witnesses who were saying that the police were there the whole entire time, that the SWAT team was in the parking lot of the restaurant, and they said, I'm just relaying what I read, I can't confirm it either way, but they said that the SWAT team, the police, opened fire first and got the whole thing started and going. That's what I heard. That's what some of the white bikers have said, is that the police started that. And then other people didn't know who was shooting, and they just assumed it was the rival gang, and they broke in the truce or whatever. And so everybody just started just turning to chaos. So it looked, again, based on some of the information that I have come across, and because I don't put nothing past police in this country, I would not doubt if they did start this firefight that occurred at the Twin Peaks restaurant. So anyway, the latest story is that they have connected bullets through ballistic testing. Four of the bikers that got killed and one of them that survived the shooting linked those to weapons that only the police use. Now, the story I read, they try to spin it and say, well, it's not known if any of the bikers had that weapon. Well, damn, didn't you arrest them all? It seemed like y'all moved in and arrested them all. And I would imagine confiscated their weapons, too. So if they didn't have any weapons, if you ain't got that in evidence, any of the weapons that the bikers, you took off the bikers, matching this particular assault rifle, then I think that it's pretty slam dunk that the police killed those bikers. They got shot with that particular caliber of bullet. So anyway, that's just some new information that has come out on that story. Somebody shared that with me today through our new submission section on blacktalkradionetwork.com, and I thought I would pass that along. All right, people, I'm over time. I got to get in touch with one of my clients, and then I also had to prepare to get Race Treaty Radio on air tonight at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Robin Benton of Anti-Racism TV is the host of that program. I'm not sure if he's hosting or Brother Onaje is hosting, but it will be a good program. I can't recall the other guest's name. He sent me the information. I just didn't I just can't recall her name. It should be a good program, as they'll be talking about combating racism through the United Nations and whatnot. And then 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, the Lotus Place radio show should be on air with Sister Black Rose hosting that program. All right, peeps. Recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines. There's a battlefield out there. It's called Battlefield America. Casualties are being created every day. They are catching new slaves to put on the Neo plantations every day. So to decrease the likelihood that you will become either a casualty or a new slave, Kanye West did make a song called New Slave. Go listen to it. He was trying to tell y'all something, but apparently didn't enough of you catch on to what he was saying. So, but to decrease the likelihood that you will become a new slave or a casualty, you need to develop battlefield awareness, codification, and situational awareness so that, you know, you can increase your chances of surviving. All right? Because we do live in a war zone. And people want to act like, you know, we're in a peaceful nation when all evidence suggests that we're not in a peaceful nation, that this nation is still at war with itself. Okay, so y'all be safe this weekend and make sure y'all tune in Sunday night to when I'll be back on air with an episode of Political Prisoner Radio, which I host and produce with Sister Amijo Whitlock. Peace and blessings to all. Again, be safe out there.
Party people, say yo get funky. So silent folks, say yo get funky. Don't do you later, say yo get funky. Yeah, just hit me. Just hit the funk and hit me. Just get on down and hit me. Damn, I just get so funky.